listening to the Miles to Go podcast, the go-to source for travel tips, news, and reviews you can't afford to miss. Now, here's your host, travel expert Ed Pizza.
Welcome back to another episode of the Miles to Go podcast, where we bring you the latest travel news, tips, and tricks each week to help you save money and travel better. We've got a double dose of Jennifer Yellen from Deals We Like this week. Jen has been on more episodes than any other guest on the podcast. She joins us each week to share a deal with us to take advantage of. She's done that this week with news of a Southwest Airlines status match opportunity. But before we go there, she's going to tee up the show with a longer story about how her family saved hundreds of dollars on a recent ski trip because they bought hotel points. We thought that this deal segment would work better as a longer story so she could explain a little bit more in depth. I'm generally not in favor of buying points unless you have a very specific use for them. Jen walks us through how she purchased hotel points to save money on this trip, and this is especially timely because there are multiple sales going on right now for hotel points. Be careful, though. Not all sales are created equal. Do the math to make sure that it makes sense for you, and never buy points unless you have a very specific plan to use them. Lastly, we wrap up this week's show with Seth Miller of PaxX.Aero, who might be the second most frequent guest on the show. United Airlines announced a bunch of changes that customers are sure to like, including an entirely new airplane type. Well, a kind of new airplane type. If you're enjoying the show, I hope you'll do us a favor and share it with a friend. Make sure you subscribe to the show so you can get our new episodes for free as soon as they're available each week. It's easy to do whether you're listening in Apple Podcasts or wherever great podcasts are found. And be sure to drop us a line and let us know who we should have on future episodes and what questions we can help you answer. You can email me, Ed, at pizzainmotion.com. And you can find us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram by searching Miles to Go. We're going to step away for a quick break and be back with Jen from Deals We Like to talk about how to save money on your travel. We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. Back on the Miles to Go podcast, and we've got Jen back with me from Deals We Like to kick off the show this week. Hey, Jen, thanks for being back on.
Thanks, Ed. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and so, for those that may not read my blog on a frequent basis, you know, lots of folks talk about the ability to purchase points to help defray travel costs, and lots of folks purchase airline miles as well. And, you know, I generally lean against it. I certainly don't like buying points speculatively where you're just buying them and hoping to be able to use them at some point in the future. But I understand that it's a little bit of a narrow-minded stance. And Jen and I were talking about segments that we should cover for the show that would help folks. And, you know, she shared with me that she's got a story of how purchasing points saved her family money. And so I wanted to offer that up. You know, certainly, like I said, I lean against this, but I think it's great to hear an opposing view on it. And she's got three posts up right now that talk about current deals where you can purchase points. And we're going to link to all of those in the show notes. But we also want to focus specifically on Jen's story about how purchasing Chase points saved her family some money on a recent trip. Is that right, Jen?
Absolutely. So I agree with you. I absolutely do not tell my readers to purchase points speculatively. I say, you know, I advise against it, but I do say, go ahead, do the math. And if you have an upcoming stay that you already have booked that you could cancel or you're looking to book, do the math and see if purchasing points would actually save you money than paying whatever the current going, you know, rate is at the property. Sure. And there's been a few scenarios in the past where I've actually purchased points for the particular stays, and it has saved like a boatload of money. Of course, you don't earn points when you purchase points, but even not getting those points have really, you know, allowed my family, and I've even done it for my parents, to save a good amount of money. And right now there's promotions at both at Choice Hotels, Hilton, and Hyatt. And I know last year with you, Ed, I actually did another podcast with you about how we save money by purchasing Hyatt points as well. So there's always good examples. And then there's always some situations where stay away from purchasing points. It's not going to save you money. And just because there's a promotion does not mean it's something you should take advantage of. So I always say, you know, kind of take out your calculator and see if it's worthwhile.
Yeah. And you brought up that we talked about the Hyatt deal last year, which I agree, you know, definitely worked out well for you. And I think, you know, for folks who are listening and they're trying to figure out where they want to be in this miles and points game, I think, you know, planting your flag on the title of Jen's blog, Deals We Like, is a great place to be. I think some folks sort of get caught up in the, I've got to collect points and what am I going to use them for? And, you know, I got to make sure it's the perfect redemption. But we're trying to get the best deal. And in the end, if purchasing points helps you do that, then it can be a good fit. As Jen and I both said, like, you know, let's not do it speculatively, but let's dig into your recent choice points purchase so folks can understand how they can apply this current promo to help them.
Sure. So one program that's really not talked about a lot, I feel like, in the entire points amount industry as a whole is Chase Hotel Privileges program. They're more on your lower level hotels. You know, you're not going to have your luxurious stay and sink kits per se with them, but they really can allow you to stay potentially in a great location at a great cost. And right now they have a promotion where you can get a 30% discount. And this is a promotion that comes and goes quite often. Sometimes it's 30%, 40%. So this is not one of those like once in a lifetime opportunities. If right now is not the best time, I guarantee you in 2 months, you'll see another promotion, maybe a little bit worse, maybe a little bit better. So, you know, that's one thing. Like my mom called me the other day and said, I see there's a high promotion, 40%. Well, that promotion comes all the time. If right now is not the best time, wait till you actually need the points and you actually have a redemption. And she didn't really fully understand me. I'm like, you have higher points. You're not going to buy higher points if you already have them. Use your points up and then buy them if the need is there. So back to the choice one, right now it's a 30% discount. And many of you might not know this, but Choice actually has this whole Ascend collection, which is their higher level. You know, you might stay at Ascend collection property and not even know that you could have used your choice points. And that actually happened to me more recently. There was this amazing Expedia deal where you could get, I think it was 90% off, quickly went on. It was valid for about a good hour. And I was able to book a hotel for about $40 a night up at the mountains in New Hampshire. So up in the East Coast or Northeast, there are not great point redemption opportunities when you want to go on your ski vacations. And there's probably a handful at most. This is not, we're not talking about what you see in, you know, Vail and Beaver Creek in Utah. So they can get expensive. And we stayed at the property and I realized it was one of their blue-green vacation properties, timeshares. And so the timeshares are part of the Ascend collection. And since the Ascend collection is part of Choice, you can actually use your points there.
Oh, yeah.
So after further research, and we loved the hotel. It was awesome. It was less than a half a mile or a mile away from a great family-friendly mountain, Loon Mountain. And we're a big ski family. So it was a great find for us. I don't know if I would have ever realized this otherwise. And for some reason, that hotel only cost 16,000 points over the winter and north of 30 points over the summer. Although I would assume wintertime to be peak season, they're saying summer, which makes sense, you know, in the White Mountains, is peak season. So in the winter, you can stay there for just 16,000 points. And since it's a timeshare property, that means they have one bedroom, two bedroom studios, potentially three bedrooms, I can't remember, available. And those 16,000 points can even get you a two bedroom. It's just whatever's available, you can book for the same flat 16,000 points. And typically this hotel is at least, you know, $250, $300 plus dollars a night. During the weekends, probably even a little bit more. But if you go ahead and just purchase those 16,000 points, you're looking at about $120 a night. And for to stay $120 a night at in a two bedroom, a mile from the mountain is pretty awesome. And so moving forward, that's kind of going to be our local ski spot. We've kind of decided since there's not many other opportunities to use our points. And to stay $120 during peak season for us, for a ski family, is pretty awesome. I mean, of course, you can't stay multiple weeks over, you know, by purchasing points because you're capped at just 50,000 points. You can get around, you know, 2-3 nights a year per account. So you can have one account, your husband can have one account, maybe random family friend can have an account. You just use their points.
The dog can have an account.
Your dog, your kids, I mean, grandma, grandpa, you know, the sky's the limit.
You mentioned the ability to book bigger rooms, and I think you think that's a great point for folks out there who may not know that. I covered this on my blog a while back when I was doing some research for a project for the Points Guy, and your experience there is not the only example I've seen of that in the timeshare world. Wyndham has a timeshare property called Magic Village down in Orlando, where you can actually book up to a 4-bedroom property for the same price as a studio or 1-bedroom when you're booking on Points, as long as there's availability. So I think it's awesome that you guys were able to get that sort of space, or potentially could get that sort of space up to a 2-bedroom here, with a kitchen, which, you know, for folks that are traveling as a family, that can help save money. I'm not saying everybody should cook in the room and eat meals in the room, but it gives you the ability to, you know, have breakfast for the kids, you know, shave some dollars off there. Maybe you've got snacks in the room. So things that can help defray the cost of travel. And if you're living on a budget, that means that maybe you can squeeze a second vacation in that year because you use, you know, Jen's strategy of purchasing points to save that money.
Absolutely. I mean, we stopped at the local convenience store beforehand. We got eggs and pancakes, and we had eggs and pancakes in the morning. And, you know, when you have to be at the mountain at 8:30 for ski school, you're not stopping to go out to some luxury breakfast. So having an opportunity to eat in the hotel easily while the kids are getting ready was, I mean, a huge save in both time and stress and money. So this is a great opportunity. And, you know, it's not just for the timeshares. You can use it for any of the choice promotions. And my parents, I purchased points for them back in October, I think it was. They were driving down the California coast, and right in Carmel, there's two great choice properties right near the water, right in town. And I think it ended up being that they spent about $60 a night at the property versus, you know, $120 a night, which is half off. It was great. My mom was very impressed with my strategy there.
As far as Choice Hotels goes, when you purchase points, for folks that don't have experience with it, when you purchase points, how long does it normally take for the points to appear in your account?
I can't remember. I had a lot of issues when I went ahead and purchased points because I was purchasing points in my mom's account. On my account. My mom didn't have an account. I was using my mom's credit card to purchase points in my account. And since it didn't match, it took about four or five days for them to say the transaction didn't go through. And I did it again. And I couldn't figure out why. And it took a few phone calls. But so when you go ahead and purchase Choice Points, I'm not sure if this is the case for all hotels, because I actually don't purchase points quite often. This was really one of my limited opportunities, is that the credit card and the name had to match identical. And then my name, my Choice account's in my maiden name. And then, so I used my credit card, which is in my married name, and that still didn't work. So I ultimately ended up just creating a whole new Choice account. And it went through within a few days, not immediately, but I'd say 3-4 days, if I recall. And one thing to know about Choice Points, or Choice Privileges program, unlike other programs, you can only book 90 days in advance unless you have their status. So that's one important thing to know. So if you're looking to go, you know, stay next winter and purchase points now, you're not going to be able to book and see availability until 90 days out. And the availability might fluctuate between now and then. So that's definitely one thing to keep in mind. That's the huge, huge, huge flaw with their program. It used to be 30 days, but fortunately they upped it to 90 days.
Yeah, which is still a tough one to work through, but
absolutely,
you know, but still a good value. And like Jen said, even if you set aside the savings from breakfast for them, they saved over $100 a night by purchasing points. So I'd certainly call that a win. And I think the win for us today is we're gonna hit our first break, but we're gonna keep Jen around, and she's got a great deal for us that you should be looking at if you've got any airline status. It's a great new status match offer. Jen, hang tight for just a minute, and we'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. Hey, I wanted to tell you about a new piece of travel gear that's a perfect fit for me, and a discount if you're interested in purchasing. Bluffworks makes clothing that's built for travelers. They released a vest a few months ago that works perfectly for me, especially with my business travel. It's very lightweight, makes it really easy to travel with, and it has 7 pockets, which means I can pack plenty of gear in it when I need to. which is most of the time. Bluffworks also makes great jeans, dress pants, blazers, and more. Check out bluffworks.com/pizza and be sure to key in my code pizza to save 10% on virtually everything Bluffworks sells. That's bluffworks.com/pizza. All right, and we're back, and we were able to hold on to Jen so we could talk a little bit more about Southwest Airlines and how to get a status match with Southwest. And certainly Southwest has been in the news quite a bit with their lucrative companion pass offer, which just expired. But Jen's back with more good stuff on Southwest. Jen, thanks for hanging around a little longer.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me again. I can talk about Southwest all day, so this is good.
Yeah, you've been a companion pass holder for 632 years, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I'm going to have it like after I die and everything.
All right, so let's walk through this this A-list status offer that they've got out now.
Sure. So Southwest came back again. So they had this promotion last fall. It expired at some point in December. And then they came back out with it end of January, where if you have status with any other airline, you can match to their A-list status. So A-list status definitely has some perks. It's not going to get you, a live flatbed just because those aren't accessible on Southwest. It's just not their airline. And there's, so you'll have it for 90 days. And within those 90 days, if you fly three round trips or six one ways, within those 90 days, you'll be able to extend that status for another 12 months. And this is a promotion that goes until December 9th of this year. So you have 10 months to status match. So you'll really want to time it appropriately. If you're not flying with Southwest until September, let's say, you are able to be eligible for the match because you have status with another airline, wait until right beforehand to actually do the match so you'll have that status for your upcoming flight. But do keep in mind, it'll take about a week or two for the match to come through into your account. When I did it last fall, it took exactly 5 days for my match to come through, which is quicker than they say. They say 12 business days. But so plan on a week or two to actually have it hit your account and to be eligible for that A-list status for your upcoming flight.
Yeah, and because this runs through December, I just want to make sure that we emphasize to folks, this may not be one that you want to run out and get. You want to time it to a point where you need two key factors here. As Jen said, you got to make sure you can hit the six one ways or three round trip flights so that you can extend it another 12 months. But you also want to make sure that you're hitting it at a time where it can be of value to you after you get it. So you got to balance those two things. But that's the goal, to make sure we can get the most value out of this, because as Jen said, it's not going to give you a ton of stuff, but it does give you more points. It gives you priority boarding and priority check-in, which is great if you're getting it for free.
Absolutely. And this is a promotion that I took advantage of last time it was around, even though I knew I didn't have six one-way paid flights. So even flying on points is not going to be, it's not going to help you. It's when you're paying for those flights that will qualify towards extending your status. And the reason why I didn't just cancel and rebook on a paid fare when I had the upcoming opportunity was because the flight prices went up astronomically. So it just wasn't worth it. And another thing to know is with most Southwest promotions, this one included, only flights booked after you register will actually count. So that's the unfortunate thing. So if you have some flights upcoming that have already been booked prior to registering, you're going to want to go ahead and cancel, rebook if the fare hasn't gone up much. So when I took advantage of it, I was really taking advantage of those benefits for those upcoming flights that I had within 90 days.
Right. Yeah.
I knew it wasn't going to, stick along on my account for much longer, but it was nice to have.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out if I can make this one work for me. I've just got to figure out the timing on 6-1 ways. Cause I do fly Southwest a reasonable amount throughout the year. Just not usually in batches. So
right.
I've got some planning to do now that Jen has ramped me up on what's to come, and, can't wait to see if I can qualify for A-list status again. Jen, thanks for hanging out with us for two segments today. when you're not burning time with me on the podcast, tell folks where they can track you down.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me again. You can find me on my blog, dealswelike.com, and then via most social media channels, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. I'm really trying to get up on Instagram, so please follow me on Instagram. And anything at dealswelike, well, you'll find me. Feel free to send me a message or an email, tweet at me, anything, and I'm happy to help individual questions.
Awesome. And guys, we'll have a link to in the show notes, as always, to the A-List Status Match offer on Jen's blog, so you can see all the details to get it. Jen, safe travels. Can't wait to have you back on.
Thanks for having me. You too, Ed.
And we'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. While we're taking a quick break from the show, I wanted to let you know about our monthly Amazon gift card giveaway. Each month, we're going to give a $50 Amazon gift card to one of our mailing list subscribers. As long as you stay subscribed, you'll have a chance to win each time we have a giveaway. We'll always send you the best travel info, and we'll never sell your email address to anyone. You can subscribe right on our homepage, milestogo.boardingarea.com. Back on the Miles to Go podcast to talk about an airplane that I had not heard of until today. And of course, if it involves airplanes and I haven't heard of them, that means that we've got Seth back on from PaxX.Aero, as well as Wandering Aramean. Hey, Seth, thanks for joining the show.
Hey, happy to be back.
And for those of you that wonder about the authenticity of the podcast, Seth is actually sitting in an airport right now on his way down to ride the Airbus A220 back from Dallas on the inaugural Delta flight that I was supposed to be on with him. But alas, due to complications, will not be joining him.
Yeah, because you're a loser also.
Well, that's fair. That's fair. I was going to blame it on the government, but, you know.
Can't we do both?
Okay, that's true. Those conditions can exist independent of each other.
Yeah.
So I'm driving down the road today, and I have Twitter notifications set for Seth, and this note pops up about United and Bombardier launched the CRJ-550, and of course the first thing that goes through my head is, what the heck is a CRJ-550?
Which is a very good question. And, you know, you say you'd never heard of it before, which is fair, because until this morning, no one had heard of it before, except for, you know, a couple dozen people who were making the damn thing. The CRJ-550 is an interesting play by Bombardier and United, mostly driven by pilot scope clause rules. And it's a new configuration of an existing plane. The CRJ-700 that many passengers know and somewhere between hate and vaguely tolerate, as a general rule. Some people like it, I guess, but they're
no,
not.
I really like the CRJ-7, mostly just because of the, generally speaking, on the routes I normally fly it, it's the first class cabin is a single seat on the left and two seats on the right, and the ratio of first class seats to coach seats means I've done fairly good on upgrades.
Well, that's about to get better, let me tell you. So the CRJ-700 typically has, I think, 68 seats today. On the United configuration, they're going to switch it to only have 50 seats. They're going to install 10 seats in first class, 20 seats in economy plus, and 20 seats in economy. The economy plus and the first class are going to have more leg room than ever. And they're going to have bigger closets inside in the middle to help separate first class and economy, but also more space for bags. So you shouldn't have to gate check your bag as often. They're going to keep the 1-2 layout up front, so it'd be four singles and three pairs that gets you your 10 seats total, and then 2-2 throughout the rest of the rows for another 10 rows, 5 and 5. But basically what it comes down to is United needs more planes. They need to get rid of the CRJ-200s, which are their 50-seaters that really everybody hates, and they need to come up with a way to do it that doesn't break their what's called the scope clause with their pilots union. What the scope clause says is basically, these are the different types of planes that the airline is allowed to operate with regional partners. So any, when you get like a SkyWest operated or GoJet, who's going to operate these 550s for United or all those other sort of regional carriers, the pilot union at the main airline, you know, says, okay, all the planes flying for United have to be flown by us. And then they sort of carve out these scopes of places where that's not true. So in this case, it's United can have, I think it's 247 plus or minus a few 70-seat airplanes, and then as many 50-seaters as they want. And so United needs more 50-seaters the CRJs are awful. They have all these CRJ 700s lying around. And what they're actually going to do is take some of the existing 700s, reconvert the interiors, and call it a 550 to make it all work.
And oddly enough, I have questions. And, you know, given how new it is, I understand we may not have all the answers, but...
No, but I'll make them up anyways.
I like that. So first thing's actually not a question. I just think, you know, sort of like how I'll always refer to the Airbus Bombardier partnership as the C series, because that's just what I remember the plane being. I just feel like we should refer to this as the Scope 550. I just think it's easier that way.
I will say someone else made a funny joke on Twitter that we could, rather than calling them closets, we could call them claws. It's C-L-A-U-S-E.
I saw that.
That was a pretty good one. I appreciated that. So.
I like that. So first question is a little bit more of a nerdy technical question. As I recall it, whenever I've gotten on a plane with a closet in the front, and maybe this is just, you know, the flight attendants being nitty, they generally don't allow bags to be stacked on top of each other in those closets. And they say it's an FAA rule because of the rating for the closet. Is that like BS? And we expect that these closets for bags will be able to stack bags up to the top of the cabin, or, you know, what do we expect there?
We don't know is the short answer. The longer answer is I certainly expect that it's entirely possible that the general galley closets are like the walls are not rated for that many heavy bags inside, and that these new ones will be properly handled for that. I can't imagine United and Bombardier are going to advertise how good these are going to be in terms of capacity and then not actually build them for that. They might be stupid, but they're not that stupid.
For sure. And they did such a good job on the interior of the C series in terms of, you know, wider aisles and good overhead bins and all that stuff. So like they've certainly got some trust capital built up with me that they'll get this right.
Yeah.
So the second question is, how does United make money on this? How do they make money taking a 700 fuselage and putting this few number of seats on it? Do they really think could be able to command the premium?
That is a darn good question. And I have a couple thoughts on that. One is there will be first class seats, so that helps. And maybe that's just enough. The other theory I have is that, you know, we've heard a little bit over the years, and I don't remember if I've talked about it with you on this or other places, about a pilot shortage.
Sure.
And whether you want to believe it or not, there are fewer pilots flying these days. It's harder and harder to get certified. The hours and the cost requirements to get there are pretty high, and fewer people are going into it as a career because of those first few years, you know, suck. Essentially, you're getting paid nothing. You've invested 100, 150 grand in your education and certification, and you're getting paid 30 or 50 or 60 grand, and you got to pay it off and still live and do all those other things, and the hours suck, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So with fewer pilots around, the regional operators have sort of been poaching at each other, trying to keep their crews, you know, sufficiently staffed. And one of the challenges there is smaller planes generally get paid less. And so as they can, pilots are moving up to larger planes. So one of my theories is that by reducing the number of CRJ 200 pilots they need and bundling them in with the 700s, they get some efficiencies there that they can sort of benefit from the same group of pilots operating both as opposed to having to split them. Now, is that enough? I don't know, but I think that's part of it. It sounds good, even if it's not true, right? I mean,
for sure. You know, I think that I'm more inclined to buy into that. I think, you know, so when I looked at the config, you know, as you say, there are first class seats, but if I think of this plane configured as a CRJ7, it would actually have two more first class seats than the configuration has. So for folks that are listening, we're going to link to Seth's post where he has a diagram of the plane, and there are three full rows of first class where it's one seat on the left and two seats on the right. And then the fourth row of first class has just a single seat on the left-hand side of the plane, and it has a closet to the right, where on a decent number of CRJ7, CRJ9, I don't have a good enough memory to know which ones are which on which routes, have four rows of first class for a total of 12 seats.
Sure. And so they are, you know, reducing the first available to sell. But if you think of them putting these on routes that are currently operated by ERJ-145s or CR2s, which are 50-seat planes, you got 10 extra first-class seats to sell and 10 real economy plus seats, which elites get for free or excuse me, 20 real economy plus seats, but elites get that for free. But passengers pay for that. Passengers pay on these length flights probably $29 to $59 for that little bit of extra legroom. And that incremental revenue will help United as well. And that's money they could not realize on the 50-seaters. Another thing to consider, just going back to the crew conversation, 50 seats means only one flight attendant instead of two.
No, that's a good point. I think that's a that's a really good point on savings, because I think that's relevant. I think specifically, and I don't know if we have this information at this point, but do we think that any instance of a CRJ 550 is truly not replacing a CRJ 7 that United could be flying somewhere else?
I don't think we've seen it yet, but my expectation is these will, at least for starters, be one-to-one against existing 50-seat routes where
right.
United thinks they have premium demand. The other thing, and I don't know if this is specific to the type, sort of the 550 designation, if it's just something they're sort of talking about or if it's something sort of written into how they're doing it. There's been discussion that these will be limited to 900-mile routes or targeting 900-mile cap on the route length. So they aren't going to be the longer necessarily CRJ7 routes. So that will also help and sort of also speaks to replacing the 50 seaters.
Yeah. And for what it's worth, I certainly don't have a ton of data from the airlines to back this up, but my own personal business travel experience is that many of the routes the CRJ200s serve now have what I would consider to be preferential pricing for United. Preferential is probably not exactly the right word, but they enjoy a pricing premium on a lot of those routes. I spend a decent amount of money on routes to some of those smaller cities.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where whether I'm buying it 2 weeks ahead of time or 2 months ahead of time, the pricing premium is there. And I would imagine that means that there is a fairly healthy mix of business to leisure on those sorts of routes. And as you say, they should be able to capture some extra revenue by putting some of those people in first class.
Yeah. I mean, they really are looking at one of the ones examples they gave was Bentonville, the Arkansas, the Walmart run.
Oh yeah.
And my comment initially was, doesn't Walmart only pay for coach, but all the suppliers who are flying in, if you've got a choice and you've got to connect anyways, especially international, and if you've got that, 90-minute extra hop, would you take Delta or American that has a two-class CRJ or ERJ, or would you take United with its one cabin 50-seater that no one likes? And even just putting aside that specific, the point-to-point routes, especially for the connections now, I think they're going to see some really nice benefit from having the ability to connect people all the way through with a proper first class seat, even if it's just domestic F for part of the trip.
Yeah, and I go a step further when we talk about routes like that to Bentonville and Fort Wayne, Indiana is another one of those ones, or some of the Dakota routes. Those flights are traditionally very full because they're low frequency and low number of seats. So as you talk about consultants and people that need to be there that are typically buying short term, they're going to buy whatever seats left on the plane. And so
sure.
In some cases that will be just the first class seat. And I think that you're just given total capacity, somebody who on these routes, because we're talking about swapping 50 seats for 50 seats. So a like number of seats, we're not increasing capacity. Somebody who was paying for a coach seat now on a flight that's, typically always full now is going to have to pay for a first class seat if they need to get there on a specific day to make a meeting. And from a consultant standpoint, those things are going to be very short term. So I do think the more I think about it, the more we talk about it, that there is a real opportunity for United to make some money here.
Yeah, no, I really think that this is a smart move on the revenue side. We'll have to see how it plays on the cost side. That's the real question. And we'll find out soon enough. I mean, I'm sure some of the analysts are going to start asking about CASM when they have their next earnings call, and we'll hear what United has to say. But United's on record as saying they hate adding more CRJ200s, but that's all they could get at the time. And so this is I give them credit for getting creative. This is definitely a creative way to approach the situation. One other added thing, just talking about the only one flight attendant that I mentioned earlier, because it's only 50 seats, for those who are concerned that you're not going to get real first-class service, A, it's a 900-mile flight, so get over it. And B, there's going to be a self-service drink and snack bar up front, which I can't imagine will have self-serve alcohol, but at least sodas and snacks should be just available to grab and go.
Yeah, I do remember reading that in the release, and I think that that's a good plus on their part. It definitely shows that United put some thought into into how they want to position this to customers. And for those of you who are not aviation nerds like Seth and I, CASM is cost per available seat mile, which is a term that's thrown around a lot by analysts, Wall Street analysts, and then the airlines.
It's how airlines decide. It's how airlines compare how much it costs to operate their fleet, because it's a sort of like for like number that they can all use.
What Seth says, he said it more intelligently than I did.
I forgot that I have to be smart sometimes. Sorry.
So when do you think we start seeing these planes?
We start seeing them this summer. It's going to be pretty quick. They're going to start in Chicago O'Hare, and they're going to grow from there out to Newark as they get converted. It is a little weird to say this is a new plane when in reality it's just an old plane with the interior being refitted, and they're not even rolling new ones off the line. They're taking the existing ones. So that's a little bizarre in some ways. And I think as United does this, it will then try to backfill and grow out its 75-seat fleet or 74-seat fleet, which it will be allowed to do because of the scope clause. And my expectation is that those are actually going to be ERJ-175s, not new Bombardier planes. So it's a little weird that Bombardier is going through all this effort and working with United on this, not going to sell any new airplanes as a result. So, but I'm sure they're getting paid for some of it. So, you know, it works. Can I add an addendum to what else, some of the other bits that were in this release?
Of course you can.
The A320s and 319s are also getting more first-class seats. Each one gets an extra row, so four more seats for both of those types as well. The 319 is going to lose a row of Economy Plus to make that happen. The 320 is going to lose half a row of Economy Plus and one Economy seat. And thus far, the only way I've ever seen an airline remove one Economy seat is by putting a sort of hard block. They put a tray table in between, like Eurobiz. And
American did
that with some of the 737s. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
I expect that will come to the United layout with the 319s, as those are retrofit as well. And so if you're stuck in economy, that might be and can grab that seat. It's probably going to be preferred and they'll charge extra for it because United isn't stupid. But if you can grab that seat, you'll at least be guaranteed a block middle next to you, which is a pretty nice way to go.
Yeah, and American on their 737s actually had a little bit less leg room in that one row where the seats were blocked. So it was quasi-preferred. You got elbow room, but not leg room to make everything work.
And then took the block out, and you still had less leg room. So, oopsie.
And added four more rows. So you mentioned 319s, which is interesting because some of those planes were coming out with just two rows of first class with the new seats. So this is an interesting move. So this added row, is this going to be just for new deliveries, or are they going to go back and retro?
They're going to retrofit all 100. It was 150. Now it's probably 160 frames they have in the family. So,
wow.
That's all happening. And the release also talked about the new 767-300 configuration. They have a new Polaris layout that is 46 business class seats instead of 30. So they're significantly increasing those. Right. That's only going to be on 21 of the 767s. But it is a overall, you know, today's announcement. That's not new news. That's relatively old news that's finally starting to happen since those planes are finally being converted. And those enter service in February going to London from Newark, which is a very high premium route. Considered the most New York to London is considered the most premium route in the world, so not surprising to see them there. But all, you know, this whole collection of announcements comes out today, and it, you know, United is pitching it as, you know, 50% increase in first class seats across a huge chunk of their fleet. And I'm not sure exactly about the 50% number, but it is definitely a huge premium push for United, given that Delta in its last earnings call announced that the largest portion of its revenue was its increase in revenue, I think, was premium sales or something of that nature. It was not just, you know, the basic economy selling tickets. The premium products were involved. It's nice or interesting, certainly, to see United making a play for that same money.
Yeah, for sure. It'll be interesting to see how all these changes pan out. Is it getting to be a big chunk of the fleet that's going to be affected?
Yeah.
Well, when you're not hanging out in an airport looking like a nerd recording a podcast with me, tell folks where they can find you.
I'm hanging out at airports and other places looking like a nerd without you, and on Twitter at WANDRME or PAXEX.AERO. I also have my own podcast, Dots, Lines, and Destinations, or Dots, Lines on Twitter, and blog.wander.me and, you know, various other places. But I'm pretty good about linking from one to another, so you can find me.
And you'll find Seth and I on the inaugural flight, Alaska Airlines flight out of Payne Field in Seattle in just about a month's time. Seth, thanks a bunch for being on the podcast today. I appreciate you taking some time on your travels.
Hey, my pleasure. And I'm happy we didn't have too many announcements during that recording. I think we got lucky.
You and me both. Safe travels. We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. Back to wrap up this week's show with the final two pennies. Today's pennies are about one of our previous show guests who also happens to play the role of producer. On top of producing both of my podcasts, Mike LaRosa is the founder of Coworkaholic.com. Mike knows the world of co-working like I know the world of donuts. Last week, he had a pretty cool achievement joining the boarding area family. I hope you'll take a moment to visit Coworkaholic.com. Wish Mike congratulations. We'll have our own celebration in the very near future as we've notched our first year in the books here on Miles to Go. Stay tuned for some news on some cool giveaways. In the meantime, remember that if you liked what Jen had to say earlier in the show about hotel points, be sure you have a very specific purpose in mind before you buy. Stay tuned for more news on what United Airlines has in store for us as well with those new first class seats. That's a full wrap on this week's episode. If you have questions I can help answer, send them in so we can answer in a future episode. You can email me, ed@pizzainmotion.com. You can also hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. And we've got a new way to submit questions and be a part of the show. If you visit our website, miles2go.boardingarea.com, you'll see an orange tab on the right-hand side labeled Send Voicemail. You can send us a voicemail with your questions for us to answer on a future show. Disclaimer, we may use your voicemail on the show, so make sure you want to be heard on the air. You'll also see the voicemail option pop up in some of my blog posts in the future. Click away and let us help you answer those questions. Thanks again for listening. A big thanks to Jen and Seth for helping me put together a great show this week. And finally, a big thanks to Mike LaRosa for helping me get the first year of the podcast under my belt. We're already putting together a great episode for next week, but until then, we've got miles to go.